Now it's time for our monthly check-in on the world of science with Discover Magazine. People across the globe were captivated by the first picture ever of a black hole. We'll talk about 100 years of Einstein's work on that subject and how some of his early theories helped lead to last week's groundbreaking news. And we'll take a look at the future of fertility and some rat cyborgs. Yes, rat cyborgs. Bill Andrews is Senior Associate Editor at Discover Magazine, based in Waukesha. Bill, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much. Always happy to be here.
Well, let's hold the rats and the black holes for a minute, Bill, and look at the future of fertility. Now, you tackle some different angles on that story, big changes, even what might happen on Mars. What are some of the things you're focusing on there?
Well, it's been a big couple of years, the last decade or so, in biology, in, you know, the lab work that people are able to do now, because there's this tool, this genetic tool called CRISPR-Cas9 that researchers can use to go into genetic codes and rewrite things very accurately, very carefully. So we look at how that and how different understandings of genetics and people's DNA profiles and how all these things might impact our reproductive choices, our reproductive abilities in some case. And so, for example, the CRISPR-Cas9 technology could go into making sure that babies in the future are not born with any predispositions to genetic diseases or defects or problems like that, which sounds great. But, I mean, anytime you're starting to mess around with our genetic code, with our DNA, it's time to also really be careful about what we're doing. People get really worried about that, and so that opens up kind of a whole host of issues involved in not just directly altering our DNA that way, but in being able to use our profiles, our genetic profiles, to maybe better select a different partner. If I know I'm susceptible to a certain disease, maybe I want to make sure not to choose a partner who also is susceptible to that disease to give any children we have a fighting chance. And so is that going to be, you know, a problem in the future? Is that going to be entering maybe on your Tinder profile or anything like that? And so it's just a whole realm of possibilities now that we're just starting to realize for this whole issue of, you know, making sure we have kids maybe with a little help from science.
And finally, this idea of if we have humans in space or on Mars, how is reproduction going to work? Because we as mammals, we're built to breed here on Earth, and there are a lot of really different conditions when it comes to gravity, oxygen levels, things like that. This could be a major roadblock if we wanted to, say, have a Mars colony that sustains itself.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And not just on Mars, but in space as well. Like you mentioned, the gravitational differences, pressure, different chemicals in the air, different radiation going through all the spacecraft. All these things are different from conditions on Earth. And so far, no one's ever been pregnant in space. No one's ever done anything in space that could lead to getting pregnant. We don't even know if that's possible, if the physics of life even work the same way in space or how that would work. So there's still a lot of research involved in just trying to understand, is this even a thing that our species can do in space, on Mars, maybe other planets someday? And if it is, how would even that work? Would it be just kind of the same free-for-all, find someone you love and hope for the best, or would it be a different kind of a program involved to maximize your colony's chances of survival? I mean, there's all kinds of different approaches you could take here to try and figure out being able to survive as a species off Earth, which, you know, one day we're probably going to have to figure out how to do.
Talking to Bill Andrews from Discover Magazine about some of the most intriguing stories in the world of science. Okay, Bill, we have this year this 100th anniversary of eclipse, a solar eclipse that was pivotal in the science developed by Albert Einstein. Why was this eclipse such a big deal for him?
Well, this eclipse that happened on May 29th, 1919, which we write about in the May issue, is a huge deal for the science of relativity, for understanding how mass and heavy objects in the universe can warp the space around them. That was Einstein's kind of big work, and he'd been working on it after he developed special relativity. That was in about 1905, and that came out, and cool stuff with the speed of light and some of the parlor tricks you can do. Cool. But then he really set to work for about a decade to work on his theory of gravity, on general relativity. And when that came out in 1916, it involved certain predictions, and it had a lot of fanciful ideas in it, stuff that even Einstein thought, this is what the theory says, but I'd be surprised if it happens in real life. For example, black holes. He was kind of skeptical about them at first. And so the big deal about that eclipse that happened in 1919 is it was the first chance that scientists had to test some of the predictions in general relativity, one of them being that objects that are really heavy, have a lot of mass, for example, the sun, should actually be able to change the direction of light that flows nearby it, which is kind of a heavy thing to think about. But if you compare light flowing to water flowing, you know, it'll follow the contours of the land. If the land shifts to the left, the water will go along with it. And so if light shifts around the warps of the sun, then we'd be able to see that difference. And so this eclipse gave astronomers a chance to really test the night sky without the sun, and then kind of a pseudo night sky because it's all shadow and darkness with the sun still there, only it's blocked by the moon. So they were able to see directly the effects of the sun's gravity on the light from distant stars. And they saw that it really did affect it. There really was a change. And so that means this guy Einstein with his crazy theories must actually be right.
And now Einstein there followed the math, and then they were able to make this observation. Another one of his predictions, that of gravitational waves, took almost another 100 years to confirm. But in 2016, news broke that gravitational waves predicted by Einstein had been detected. Here's a quick listen to what those waves, a representation of them, what they sound like. All right. So what is what's the big deal with these gravitational waves and how they might feed into, say, this picture of a black hole we just saw last week?
Yeah. So gravitational waves are super exciting. A couple of years ago, we in the Discover offices worked for weeks ahead of that story to make sure we were on top of it. We had diagrams, we had pictures, because it was such a big deal. I remember it very vividly. And it's because it's a whole new way of being able to study and effectively see the universe. And so normally we've been relying on light, on different types of light, like radio waves or gamma rays or X-rays, infrared. All those are basically just variations of light. And gravitational waves are something totally different. When heavy enough bodies, again, but this time something like black holes or neutron stars, really dense, really heavy bodies, when they do things in space, they not only warp the area right around them in space that would change the way that light flows, but they would also send out ripples through space, like a rock dropped in a pond sends out ripples on the water's surface. And so those ripples, when they get to Earth, are literally distortions in space-time. Dimensions of a cube would be a little shorter on one side and a little longer on the other side, just for a fraction of a second. And so by studying those, we can see a kind of a new window into the universe and another way of exploring black holes or neutron stars or heavy enough things that don't often emit a lot of light, don't do things directly that way, but their effects on the universe can be felt. And so now we can study them that way.
Yeah, so gravitational waves, just discovering them was a big deal. But now astronomers are like, okay, we can't stop there. We've got this Easter basket full of space goodies that we might be able to actually track down using gravitational waves, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's some boring-sounding stuff at first, like, oh, different kinds of black holes, oh, you know, we can figure out the event horizons of black holes all the better. And to me, that isn't boring at all. It's already exciting. But I know that's old hat for a lot of people sometimes. But with gravitational waves, we can also look for things like extra dimensions. Not parallel dimensions in the way of like, oh, I have a doppelganger in another universe who won the lottery and now he doesn't work. But extra dimensions in the sense of more than just the three familiar ones that we're used to, length, height, and width. Maybe depending on how gravitational waves show up on some people's computers, if they ripple kind of a certain way, that could tell us that there's other dimensions that they're also rippling within. There's also stuff called strange matter that might be the makeup of some of the densest, heaviest neutron stars that are made up just of quarks, some of the constituents of protons and neutrons, and specifically the strange quarks. And they're weird because if anything touches this theoretical strange matter, it would become strange matter too, because it's so heavy, it just sends everything and kind of cascading like a dominoes falling on top of each other. And so different kinds of gravitational wave readings would also reveal if that matter really exists, if there really are stars out there made of nothing but strange matter. So just all kinds of goofy, crazy, interesting things going on that gravitational waves can now start to tell us about.
And Bill, before we wrap up, one more non-boring story. Research on creating rat cyborgs that can be controlled with the human mind. What?
Yeah, exactly. Not a big deal, right? Just your average story about rat cyborgs. And this is one I remember writing about for the website that got a lot of people excited, including us in the staff. And it's a scientific paper in the journal Scientific Reports called Human Mind Control of Rat Cyborgs Locomotion with Wireless Brain-to-Brain Interface. Scientists were able to hook up a human into kind of a special hat. And by thinking certain thoughts, that human was able to convince, compel, direct, mandate, whatever you want to say, a rat into moving left or right or forward through a maze. So we were able to make rats move just by thinking about it, which, you know, that's kind of crazy. But real science, peer-reviewed, absolutely the fact.
And this is something that theoretically other scientists will now try to replicate and see where they can take it?
Yeah, it's something that could help out with prosthetics, with communication. Another scientist talked about the possibility of an expert surgeon being able to kind of manually, digitally from a distance, take over the hands of another surgeon to perform a really careful operation. You know, even being able to communicate things that are tough to communicate with words. But if you're connected brain to brain, then you could get emotions and feelings across. All these possibilities might now be possible just by being able to kind of hook up people's brains to each other. So it's pretty exciting, if a little creepy.
We'll let that sink in now. Bill, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
That's Bill Andrews, Senior Associate Editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. He joined us for a monthly check-in on the world of science.